Bro, it has happened, and nothing can take that away from you. This is Xander, signing off. And remember, queer struggle is class struggle.
CKUT, Henry Grimes. And stay tuned for more of the most aesthetic things, feelings in the world.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. I'm your host for the evening, Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
You'll recognize I'm not that special. I'm broken inside, crashing slowly. The bugs are in me.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Tia Savon, a black educator and reproductive justice activist, the content creator behind the multimedia digital platform Slippery When Wet. Slippery spelt with a 3, substituting the E. Her work is rooted in the intersections of the black lived experience and human sexuality. Her motto is centering black faces in sexual places. So just a little, a little note. If your kids are around, this conversation is going to be more of the mature variety, so you might want to listen with your headphones or listen later on the archives, because this conversation is going to be adult oriented. Tia, thank you so much for being here. Yeah, even though you're based in the States, for coming to Montreal for a little bit and hanging out online with us, having this talk. How are you doing?
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me. I'm fine. I'm starting off the new year, you know, trying to set good intentions, getting the work rooted, and figuring out like how to be authentic in this work and show up for the people who need me to, but also still, you know, prioritizing my own rest and pleasure. So like we're here, we're living.
Right. Let's just jump right into it. How did you
what path led you to becoming a sex educator who is also a reproductive justice advocate, activist?
Yeah. Okay, so boom. I grew up...
I know this story is going to be a good one because we had the boom. Okay, so boom. This is what happened.
Right, this is what happened.
What happened was...
I am a Black queer woman born and bred in the southern part of the United States, right? Woo! Colloquially known as the Bible Belt, right?
The best place, right? The absolute most
the
wonderful
South got
place.
Something to say, baby. The South got something to
say. Lord. Okay.
But yeah, growing up in the Bible Belt is a very unique experience because... on one token, it's still America, and, you know, sex is everywhere, and the motto is sex sells. But on the other token, like, we're called the Bible Belt. It's a super conservative area, and there are probably more churches than there are schools here, right? Like, it is an insane dichotomy of kind of this lived experience.
Could you tell us geographically what the Bible Belt is, just in case, like, folks here don't know what you're referring to?
Yeah, so some people say, like, below the Mason-Dixon line, which means absolutely nothing to people who don't live in the United States. So right. I hate when people say that. But basically, if you look at the East Coast and the Southern states, so Kentucky, Virginia, the Carolinas, Tennessee, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, basically all the places that have ever been the scene for any, like, slave or race-based movie, right. Like, them states, that's where we're at.
Okay.
That's where we're at, right?
Yes.
The Confederate, right? That
yes.
is... where the Bible Belt is geographically located.
My goodness. Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, growing up, no one ever really talked about sex. And, you know, in the U.S., sex ed is not universally mandated. The only time it's even a requirement is if you reach a certain threshold of teenage pregnancies in your county, right? And that varies by county and by state.
Of course.
So for a lot of people... that's just one of those hush-hush, no-no things you don't do until after marriage, right? And what mm-hmm. happens after that marital threshold is all, like, a mystery.
Mm-hmm.
However, everybody and their mama is doing it. We're just not talking about it openly, right?
Exactly.
And so I remember when I was a kid, my sister was playing with, like, these two toys, and she was, like, making them have sex, right? And they were moaning and making all these sex noises. She's 2 years older than me. I can't remember how young I was. I had to be very young, like, six or seven.
Right.
And my dad came in with my then stepmom at the time, and they, like, flipped out, right?
Of course.
And so they're, like, freaking, and they're like, this is inappropriate. And my sister blames me. She's like, it wasn't me. It was her.
God.
And I'm looking like, you trifling.
You're supposed to have my back.
What happened? What happened to the family that raised together, right? And so I ended up getting in mad trouble for this, like.
Of course.
And as a result, I didn't end up seeing my dad. Like, I ended up getting a whooping. Like, my stepmom at the time ended up whooping me, and my mom found out and, like, flipped, like, lost her shit. Can I cuss?
It's okay.
Okay.
It's okay. If it slips out, it slips out.
Okay.
It is what it is.
She lost it, and, like, I ended up not seeing my dad for a couple years, but the thing that kind of blew me is my mom is not super conservative, and so I had grown up, like, being able to watch, like, the sex scene. Like, not, it wasn't that big of a deal. Like, she wouldn't be like, look, but she wouldn't draw attention to it because she was the kind of mom that, like, she thought if you didn't say anything about it, I wouldn't think it was a big deal.
Right.
It's kind of like when kids curse, and you're like, oh, no, don't say that, and then they want to curse more.
Right.
She would just be like, oh, let me ignore it, and then it will lose its novelty, right?
Right. Right.
But after that, she was like, no, like, everything was shut down. But no one ever talked to me about why this thing was bad. Like, mm-hmm. I knew what the noises were. I wasn't really interested in them. Mm-hmm. But the amount of trouble that I got in and the way that, like, upended my life, right? Like I
right.
said, I didn't see my dad for a couple of years, right? Like, but then no one was talking about what it was that this was. And me.
So you say you didn't see your dad for 2 years. How come that happened?
So I end up getting, like, a whooping from my stepmom, yeah. and my mom found out that she was not okay, and then
okay.
she came over raising sand, and then when she came over raising sand, they ended up being this huge altercation.
Right.
And the altercation between all the parties that be, right, like, it was a physical altercation. That ended up being the reason for, like, why I didn't see my dad. But all of that spawned from, you know, someone playing with dolls.
Two dolls going, ooh.
Yeah.
Right.
You know? Jesus. And so to me, I was like, that seems like this is a big deal that no one's talking about.
I want to know more.
Like, I've never been the kind that was like, look at that forbidden place. Let me not go over there.
Right.
I'm like, no. Let me tell me a little bit more about it. I'm intrigued
So you're one of those people on TikTok when the TikToker, those TikTok videos come on and they're like, don't look up this blah, 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 blah. You're like,
immediately looking it up. Like, I have the TikTok open on my phone and I'm also on my computer. Like, and so immediately looking it up. Like, I might even pause the video so I can return to the video after I've looked it up. And then I still have the gall to look at people and be like, I can't believe you said that. Like, you forced me to look it up. And they're like, I quite literally said,
do not look at this.
But yeah, so like, that's kind of how I got interested in the subject matter of sex.
Okay.
And then as I kept growing up and getting older, I, you know, noticed more and more of how like taboo it was in our society. And I'm also queer, right? And like I said, I'm in the Bible Belt. And so even though, you know, I am bisexual, cisgendered, I'm passing, if you saw me with a man, you wouldn't be like, that's probably a queer woman, right? Like, you would have to see me in a queer dynamic to understand that, like, I also hold that identity.
Mm-hmm.
But I still, that was something that I knew, like, from my family, from the religious background, from the cultural pretext that's here, like, that's a big no-no. But I couldn't understand why that was wrong either, because I was like, it's not really hurting anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And like, again, exactly. We're not talking about what this is. Like, we're not even saying what queerness is. We're just saying, don't be it. Like, I had no real frame of reference for what a lesbian was. I just knew I wasn't supposed to be her, right? Like, my mom caught me looking up. I think I had, like, Google. This is back when we used to have, like, dial-up, right? Like, you can't be on the phone and a computer at the same time.
No,
you can't. I had Googled, like, two girls kissing. And, like, I didn't know how to clear my browser history.
Ooh, yeah, like, this is, that like, browser history.
MySpace days. Like, this is OG back. Okay.
Oh, God.
And I remember, like, chilling. And out of the blue, my mom comes up and she was like, Tia,
what's this?
Are you a lesbian? And I had I didn't know the word lesbian. Like, I didn't know there were different. I thought, like, I knew gay and queer.
Right.
Right. And then, like, some of the, like, slurs that people had used. But I didn't know, like, all the different labels. So I
you
was
didn't
like,
know the
no.
LGBTQIA.
I don't even think we were saying LGBT. Like, I think we were just like gay.
Right.
And then, like, the derogatory word was like, oh, yeah, those queers, right? Like,
right, right.
And then all the, like, actual slurs that people were using for people. Mm-hmm. Like, I had heard of other slurs, but I had never heard, like, lesbian. I had never heard bisexual. I had never heard of, like, especially the PAMs, the dip, like, all the stuff we got going on now was not a thing in our context when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And so she asked me, and I was like, girl, I don't know what that is. How am something I don't even know what that is? Girl, spill that. I don't know what that is.
Can you use it in a sentence?
Use it in a sentence. What's the etymology? Where is the roots of that? Because you're going to have to Aquila in the be this one for me. I don't know. I am in a state of
not
confusion.
Not the Aquila in the be.
Like, she really had to break that out for me.
Mm-hmm.
And she, like, didn't. She was just like, I was just like, well, I don't know what it is. So I'm going to just say no. And she's like, you sure? And I was like, yeah. And she was just like, okay. And it was kind of this moment where I could tell she didn't want to go into detail because she wanted to do just enough that, like, she didn't have to actually do anything, right?
Right.
Like, because if she went into detail and she was like, well, it's when two girls, maybe I would have said yes. But at this level, the surface level, she could be like, yeah, she said no, moving on.
Plausible deniability.
Plausible deniability.
She wanted to be able to go in court and say, my baby never told me. Right. I asked her, but she never told me. She
like
told me
the
no.
Google history and girls kissing girls. What do when that girl do like this? Why do I get butterflies when girls do this? Have you ever felt like this around girls? Wow, look at all of these pretty girls.
Like, oh my God.
It's the queer in the room with us.
Mm-hmm,
please.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, like, all of these different experiences kind of kept leading me down this path. But then there was no, I mean, we had onesie twosies, like Dr. Ruth exists, right? Like there are other people right. who've done sexuality who exist, but there was no real career field for that, or at least not to my knowledge, and not one that was respectable, right? Like the kind of people who worked in sex when I was growing up were sex workers, and that was also looked down in this culture, right?
Yeah.
And so I didn't have the idea like, oh, I want to be a sex educator, because I didn't know that existed. That was your gym teacher who they forced to teach a week of health class to. Right. Like, that wasn't a real career field.
No.
And I didn't want to teach gym. And I was like, and I also don't want to be poor. Because I was like, hey, there's no way to make money off of this. Like, I want to be able to eat, right?
Yeah.
And so eventually, it was the pandemic that kind of, like, spurred everything for me. I had kept up the interest.
Okay.
My major in college, I'd always leaned towards like women and gender studies, like as a concentration. I had worked with the Sex Week at UT program, which is a week at my university where they talk about all things sex, like, and from not just like health reasons, we're talking about psychological, like how sex is used or how rape is used as a weapon of war, like in certain countries. We're talking about pleasure, we're talking about gender identities, we're talking about like the intersections of religion and sex and sexuality, like all the things.
Mm-hmm.
I was just so fascinated by this, but I'm still like held back because I can't be on the streets with it. Like, this is just gonna be a hobby. It's gonna be a personal passion on the side.
Okay.
And my friends had been telling me, like, you need to do something. And I was just like, who gonna put food on my table? Like, y'all not listening to me.
Right.
And I had time during the pandemic. My hours were different, but my pay was the same.
Okay.
And so I was like, oh, I'll just start Instagram to kind of like database all my information. I didn't think nobody was gonna follow me. Nobody was gonna care. Mm. I didn't think this was gonna turn into anything. I was just like, I'll start it just kind of for my own personal blogging, kind of like journaling, but like semi-publicly.
Right.
And that really took off. Like, people were messaging me and reaching out to me. And at the same time, I started volunteering a lot deeper. So like, I'd always volunteered my entire life. It was more like one-offs. But then, like, around 2020, like, the world was falling apart. We were in a pandemic. And it was the summer of, like, BLM globally, right? And, you know, there were so many different things happening all at once. There was abortion attack under abortion attack under abortion attack, right? Like, and so I just started it almost became, like, a second full-time job that I was volunteering with.
Right.
And so someone just asked me one day, like, hey, what if we paid you to do this thing, like, part-time? And then I started growing the account, and then people were asking me to write blogs for them and host classes for them and do consulting work. So I really just stumbled in to everything that I was doing, but it had been a long time coming.
Right.
So I just finally found out.
So what were you doing while you were, like, doing it on the side? Like, what were you doing to put food on the table while you were working on the side on this?
Yeah, this is back to that, like, Southern dichotomy. I am in the United States Air Force, right? Like,
okay.
I am in the military, which seems very, like, counter to sex education. And, like, I'm in the street, like, Monday through Friday. I'm like, yeah, mm-hmm. at my desk, fighting for the country, patriotism or whatever. And then, like, after I leave work, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to this protest. Like, the government messing up, and we need to let them know. Like, and so these were two very real sides of me, right? That,
right.
to me, makes sense and fit, because that has been my lived experience here, mm-hmm. right? But, like, if you talk to anybody else, they're like, so you left this to go there, and you told them you were leaving here to go there. And I was like, yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know why.
Yeah, lies will always come back to bite you.
You know, I'm
sorry, bite you where you don't want to be bitten by whom you don't want to be bitten by.
Yes. I want to be bit when I want to get bit.
Exactly.
That's the only time.
Consensual permission.
Biting.
Right. My goodness. So I guess that leads into the next question, which is, what is a sex educator, and is there a difference being a Black sex educator?
Yeah, so there's a lot of different sexuality professionals out there. Therapists, coaches, educators, sexologists, all the things. A sex educator is someone who is basically knowledgeable about a wide range of subtopics under the category of sex and sexuality,
mm-hmm.
And they educate other people. So knowledgeable can be very expansive. Some people go to college and they get their degree in sociology or some gender studies or something like that. But not all programs have sex education programs, right?
Yeah.
But there are a couple schools that are starting to develop programs. Some people go through certifications like, hey, I just happened to get a job with Planned Parenthood and they have professional trainings on education and I just took that route. Some people are researchers and they, on their fun time, read sex journal, like the Journal of Sex, right? And mm-hmm. all these things to like give them the credentials and the knowledge base. Some people mix all the things together. So that's what an educator is. And yes, being a Black sex educator is different. Not just because of clearly, obviously, a Black person, right. but because of the intentionality behind that, right? So when I first started getting into this work, I just realized how much, like everything else, right? And our society is so focused and centered on Eurocentrism and whiteness as a whole. And how that has negative ramifications for different communities.
Yeah.
I'm Black, so I focus on my community because that's the community I know best. There are other people who are focusing on other communities, and that is all needed, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so when I talk about how harmful it is, I mean, like, there weren't depictions of, let's say, STIs or skin ailments or medical conditions on Black skin. And right. then, therefore, Black people weren't readily recognizing problems that they were facing because it looked differently on their bodies versus right. other bodies.
Right.
And so that was an issue, right? Or some of the other systemic issues that Black people have been known to face, right, in the United States and the legacies of colonialism and, you know, white supremacy. And so when you're talking about those things, we need to talk about how Black people have a lack of access to care, right? Whether that's reproductive care because of a lack of health insurance or economic inequality or education. You got to think about how the Black church is different than church at large, right?
Yeah.
And how the Black church situates itself in Black culture and how that can shift the way we think about certain things, sex and sexuality wise, right? Like,
absolutely.
How does the queer identity look different? Like, we have completely different words for Black queer identities than there are for like everyone else's queer identities. Like, if there is a masculine presenting woman, you might call her butch, like in regular lesbian terms.
Right.
But for Black people, we call her a stud. Right?
Right.
Like that's
yes.
a completely
yes.
different term. And there is the terminology of in the closet, right? But Black people might say on the down low.
I just like when you said it a while ago, the word stud, I just said that word is rooted in like colonialism and slavery.
Like,
because,
and so many terms are like the book is rooted in colonialism
yes.
and slavery. The BBC is rooted in colonialism and slavery.
Yes.
The Mandingo rooted in like all
oh
of these things.
God.
And so we need to address that
mm-hmm.
because and give it its own importance. And that's why not just being Black and a sex educator is important, but intentionally focusing on like bridging those cultural competencies that come from the work that we're doing. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you have to know about history. You have to know about like society, people, cultures, on top of the sex and sexuality, you know, and
the
you
general
have also,
information
and,
that you need to provide.
Yeah. Like
just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to Tia Savon, who's based in the States, and she is a Black sex educator and reproductive justice activist. The conversation is going, but we are on radio and we do have to pay some bills and play some music, but we're going to come back and get right back into it. So keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
If you made a compensation claim for abuse at an Indian residential school, the records of your claim are secure. They will be destroyed in September 2027 unless you choose to keep them or share them. To learn more, call toll-free 1-877-635-2648 or go to myrecordsmychoice.ca.
Next to me.
completely. When I need to be rescued and I need a place to swim, I have a rock to cling to in the storm. When no one can hear me calling, I have you I can sing to.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we are speaking to Tia Savon this evening, who is a Black sex educator, reproductive justice activist, content creator behind the multimedia digital platform Slippery When Wept, and her work is rooted in the intersections of the Black lived experience and human sexuality. Tia, like, we were getting into it before, so I just want to pick right up where we left off. You were telling us about the importance of, like, that intersection of being a Black person, understanding, like, how colonialism, how racism, how history has impacted us as Black people in general. Mm-hmm. And I mean, everyone, whether it's straight, LGBTQIA+, whatever we identify as, it affects us differently. Yeah. But also, you need to know about general human sexuality.
Yes. Yes. It's, to me, the work is important, one, because I believe in meeting people where they at, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah. Like, I read all the books and I know the big words and I can contextualize things in a very, like, sedity and, like, bougie way to have these conversations.
Right.
But the problem with academia is it has no, like, presence and practicality, like, reality. Like, I'm not talking to my friends like that. Like, that's right. Not how I'm talking. And so another aspect that's important about being a Black sex educator is being able to speak to people in the language that they use, right? Mm-hmm. And so when I'm saying these things, they're important. We need to be listening. We need to hear. We need to have these conversations. But if I'm boring you off the jump, right, or, like, you're not understanding because yeah. I'm coming at it from a PhD level and you're like, babes, like, I had that 1 week in the seventh grade, like, then yeah. we are not here, then I'm not doing my job. Right? Like, I'm not doing my job. Like, this is doing a disservice to the community.
Yeah.
And so I feel like you do that in a, like, a litany of ways, right? Like, using pop culture, like, what are the rappers talking about? What movie just released, right? Mm-hmm. How can we have these conversations and also reflect on how we got some of these attitudes, right? Mm-hmm. Like, when you're talking about respectability politics, like, I remember when WAP hit the streets,
right?
Folks was losing their minds, right? They were like, I cannot believe
WAP.
Yes, yeah. I can't believe they're talking about this. Can't believe they put it on the radio. People everywhere had an opinion, but, like, how did we get here? How did we get to these ideals and views about opinions? And why is it that the harshest come downs always happen to be on Black people? White women and white people in general have been singing and rapping and rocking out about sex for decades.
Right.
Not and, saying and, they don't
and
get
on
pushed
top
back,
of that, why do. Is it almost always even harsher for Black women? Because
yes.
Black male rappers have yes. been doing that.
And explicitly.
Explicitly.
Right? Like, I knew I was too grown to be listening to some of the things I was listening to when I was a kid, right? Like, and there was never a problem, right? The problem was your old, like, elder members of your family be like, oh, music today is so explicit and all y'all talk about is sex and da 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 da, right? But, like, I'll be listening to blues songs from the 20s and Bessie Smith is talking about popping coochie. Like, come on, sis. Like, you can't.
Listen, we don't even have to go back as far as the 20s. I mean, Marvin Gaye had a whole song about sexual healing.
Right?
Everybody, like, everybody rocks. When I get that feeling, I want, you know, like,
yes.
come on, please. It wasn't
so
explicit, but, you know.
You know, and we live in a weird time where we acknowledge those things. And we even give some people, certain groups and demographics, the freedom to express that their own ways.
Yeah.
And then when other groups and identities express those same things, then that's when, like, it hits the fan, right? And they're like, no, we have crossed the line now. Can't believe y'all would think about the kids.
Think about
what
the
about
children.
The kids? Like, you know, and so I think all of that's important too, because sometimes we forget that every person on earth lives in a society. We are influenced by our society. We are indoctrinated by our society. I don't care how free thinking you believe you are, how woke you think you are, how left-leaning, whatever, you have been indoctrinated and you have biases. We yeah. all do. Yeah. The work is to unlearn them. The work is to be reflective and open enough to acknowledge when you have stumbled down that path, right? Yeah. Like, and to be in community with people that you're accountable to, that someone could be like, hey, you bugging a little bit with that one. Like, yeah. and me be like, okay, you're someone I trust. You're someone I respect. Let me listen to what you got to say, right? And so when we're doing this, we need to be able to acknowledge if we are tripping because WAP is on the radio and we really don't think that that is good for the kids, or are we tripping because of some internalized biases we have? When Lil Nas X is on stage, like, being himself completely, mm-hmm. are we upset because of them kids, or we don't think this stage is the right stage for that behavior, or are we upset because of our own internalized homophobia, right? Like, and then maybe where our original upset is valid, but we take it to excessive levels depending on what the thing is, right? Mm-hmm. Like, because sometimes you're like, okay, I can kind of see how this offended someone. Maybe that wasn't the best time and place for something, like, you name it. Right. But then the level or the extent to which they go, you're like, whoa, it was not that bad, bro. Like, that was bias. Like, the amount that you got worked up about that was more than just inappropriate timing, right? That had more to do with, like, what that's rooted in as a whole. And so if we can't have sex education that addresses those cultural competencies, then you are not giving holistic views of what sex education is. Mm-hmm. And the point of it is for you to be a adult that's capable of making informed decisions, of you to be knowledgeable about your body, about your pleasure, about your desires, about how the choices that you're making and how those impact your life, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's one thing to be like, yes, I'm super sex positive. I think anybody should be able to do whatever what they want with whoever. It's another thing for me to lie to you and say you won't have consequences for that, right? Like, mm-hmm. you can sleep with whoever you want. You can sleep with as many people as you want, and I'm gonna support you. One thing Tia don't do is ride, right?
Right.
However, I'm not going to sit here and pretend like you won't have people of the church who say snide remarks about you behind your back.
Right.
We're not going to sit here and pretend that if you wanted to go up for president, they're not going to pull up the fact that you did an adult video way back when, right? Like, there are real consequences, because just like race is a social construct. We made it up. But there are real consequences to race, right?
Yeah.
Irregardless of the fact that it's fake. Like, we could change it at any point. Mm-hmm. We could change our attitudes about sex, sexuality, about our practices. That doesn't mean that these consequences are going away. And if I'm going to do my job, I have to inform you of the pros and cons of everything so you can make the best decision for yourself. Like, yeah, I still want to do that. I still want to be an adult performer, or I still want to sleep around. I want to do polyamory, right? Like, I want to do all these things. Okay, great. You be as polyamorous as you want. It's illegal, baby. You can't marry more than one person, one person in the States.
Right.
You're just not going to be able to do that. And if you're in the military and they find out you cheating, that's a law. Like, that's against U.S. military law for you to be cheating on your partner, right? Like, you could be court-martialed, right? That's a real consequence that you have. We take cheating that seriously. Right?
Noted. Not going to get married in the United States of America.
Right.
Not that I want to cheat, but I don't even want to be accused of cheating.
It's ghetto out here. Don't do that.
My goodness. Okay.
Yeah, because, like, there's so many things that we think we kind of have this toxic positive attitude about, that we think as long as we want it to be better, it will be better. And that's just not the case, right?
Right. Yeah.
If you decide to engage in sex as a minor and you get pregnant, people will judge you. That is the fact. They will judge you once you're 44 and they start doing the math. Like, wait a minute, how old is your kid? Right? So you had your baby when you were.
Your kid is 30, you are 44. What?
Right? Like, and that judgment will follow you until these attitudes and these cultures change. These are going to be things that you're going to have to live with, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't have a society that's set up for us, baby. Like, having a baby here is expensive. After that baby pop out and you put them on your chest, they're going to be, and that's going to be another $15,000. Thank you. You're welcome. Like, this.
I saw this. I saw this on someone's, someone's Instagram. I think it's Josh and Jenny. I'm following them on Instagram. And she was tallying up the bill for their latest baby. And she said, yeah, to put our baby girl on your chest, for you to have skin-to-skin contact, it cost like $10,000. And he was like, wait a minute.
Yes.
For me to take my baby that I made and put her on my chest.
On the teeth, right there.
Right there. That's going to cost me $10,000.
Yes.
Wow. Yes. That's insane to me.
You have to contend with those things, right? You have to contend with the fact that while, yes, you should be able to have children if you want to have children, regardless of your age, right? That could be something that prevents you of upward mobility, right? Like, childcare is ridiculous here, right? Like, all the extracurriculars that kids have to do now to be successful, to go to college and to do the next thing and to do the next thing is expensive. Everything's expensive. Cost of food's expensive. We had a baby formula shortage like a year ago.
Yeah,
right?
I heard about that.
All of these things happen. And so you have to prioritize these things. Yes, I would love for anybody who wants to be a parent to be a parent. Also, we have to acknowledge that our society does not support parents, right? Mm. We have to acknowledge that there are people who don't want to be parents, right? Like, we have to acknowledge that there are people who want to be parents, but only have so many kids. And all these people are different. And so how does our ideals of sex and sexuality, how is the history of this country, right, of some of the isms that we live under, how do they play into our ideas? Mm-hmm. And then one step further, how does that affect our politics, right? Because, like, politics is not separate from culture. If you grew up super conservative and religious, that's probably going to bleed into your politics.
Yeah.
So when we're having conversations on abortion, we're having conversations on birth control, we're having conversations on sex education, on any number of these things, sex work, on, like, anything, right? They're probably not going to be like, well, let me just forget that I read the Bible, right?
Yeah,
like, that's going to be a part of their politics.
No,
and so what does that look like? What does that mean for us? And then we are a country that is united, but is also not, right? So we have the federal government, but then also we allow states to do kind of what they want to do.
Whatever they
depending
want.
Depending on who's in office.
Yeah.
And so we saw that with the fall of Roe, right? Like, at first,
I wanted to ask you that, like, what the impact of the overturn, I believe it was an overturning of Roe v. Wade.
Yes.
That's what happened. What was the impact of that?
So Roe was such a tricky subject because Roe wasn't even 50 years old, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we got Roe in the 70s, and it was great, right, for a lot of people. A lot of people had access to legal abortion that didn't have access before. However, a lot of people didn't have access, right? The legality of Roe didn't make it any more accessible to people. There are people who had abortion clinics, but they were too far from them, right? Or they were out of their price range. Or we have the Hyde Amendment here, which basically says, no federal funding can go to abortion. So if you're on, like, government insurance, you can't have your abortion paid for. If you're in the military, which I am, I had an abortion. My military insurance does not cover that. I have to pay all of that out of pocket.
Out of pocket. Wow.
You know, so, like, those are the things that affected it. But Roe was the floor. It was the bare minimum. Like, people a lot of times like to look at Roe v. Wade and say, like, oh, it was the pinnacle and I want to go back to when times were better. Like, for who, babes? Like, Black women, women of color, brown women, indigenous women still did not have equitable access.
Yeah.
Poor women still did not have equitable access. And while we're also on the topic of Roe, we need to be talking about, while abortion is a reproductive right, it is not the only reproductive freedom. Mm-hmm. And so while a lot of predominantly white women, suburban, middle class, and upper class women were fighting for the right to abortion, right? There were a lot of gender expansive people. There were a lot of people with disabilities, people of color, people of low socioeconomic status that were fighting not to be forcibly sterilized, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
While we're talking about, hey, I would love to have bodily autonomy, but for who? Like, which class of people are we advocating for? And we don't have to take turns. They're in a line.
Yeah.
We can do all this all at once, right?
Yeah.
The great thing about life is it's complex. Two things can be true at once, and we can do all that. I got two hands. We can do all the things all at once, right? And so for us, I live in the state of Tennessee. We were one of 11, I believe, but if I check me on that, 11 or 13 states who had sugar laws. And basically what that means was for us in 2019, before the fall of Roe, we said we made it a law. If Roe ever failed, Tennessee would immediately lose access to abortion.
Wow.
Immediately. And so this is before we were even talking about like SCOTUS decisions. Tennessee said, I don't care when it goes to the Supreme Court. When it falls, right? Like the buck stops with us.
Wow.
And so there were, I want to say like 11 or 13 states that also did the same thing. They were called states with trigger laws. Mm-hmm. And so in June of last year, when Roe failed, we had 30 days. We had 30 days and then abortion was gone. So what a lot of people don't know is when Roe failed, it wasn't like abortion became illegal in the US. It basically just meant that states were allowed to do what they wanted when it came to the subject matter of abortion. A lot of states.
What does that mean?
If you want to keep it, you can keep it. If you want to get rid of it, you can get rid of it. If you want to put obstacles on it, you can put obstacles on it, right? Like barriers to keep. But it wasn't like gone. It's not like universally illegal. It just means we'll leave it up to them to kind of do what they want to do, you know?
Wow. Okay.
And so for the 11 or 13
states, the states had more control over.
Yes.
They had the autonomy to control access to abortion and rules and laws regarding abortion without the interference of the federal government. You see, like, I didn't know that. I thought it was like, okay, all the doors got slammed shut.
No.
Like a Walking Dead situation where they spray painted, you know. And just like,
yes, the press was very, like, not great about defining what that was.
No.
And so, no, what it really meant was, so we have Roe, and then later on we have Planned Parenthood versus Casey. And Planned Parenthood versus Casey kind of opened the door for the fall of Roe.
Okay.
We expected during the Planned Parenthood versus Casey case for Roe to fall. Mm-hmm. And it to be outlawed across the land.
Right.
But we had a couple of Supreme Court justices that blew everyone's mind. I was like, you know what? No, we're going to keep it. But they had a caveat that states could put rules in place as long as they didn't ban people's access to abortion.
Right.
So what ended up happening after that case is a lot of states all across the country started implementing all these rules. And instead of targeting the patients, they started targeting the facilities and the people who practiced abortion. And they started having activists come out en masse, right? Mm-hmm. Running misinformation and disinformation campaigns, right?
Like, right.
And so you started having things like a 48-hour waiting period, which doesn't block you from having an abortion. But if you come in for an appointment and let's say it already took you 3 weeks just to get this one appointment.
Yeah.
Now you have to wait 48 hours before the actual abortion. That first appointment is just to say, yes, you're pregnant, which I knew by my pregnancy test. That's why I'm here, babes. That's why I'm here. And so now you have to wait 48 hours, but it's not just 48 hours. It could push you another week, 2 weeks, however long.
Right.
And then hopefully they're hoping that either you change your mind. Also, in the process, it gets more expensive. So the longer you wait, the more expensive the procedure is because it switches from the medication to the surgical to all these
like
things.
So DMX, that, like DMX said, you know, it goes up another yard for every month after two.
Right. So they're hoping that these obstacles make you not want to do it.
Wow.
Right. And they put all of these, like the clinic has to have all these random rules that have nothing to do with abortion and care. But it makes it so difficult that as soon as you slip up, they can shut you down for 48 hours, or they can do that. Like, and so they're not banning abortion, but they're making it almost
a very
so
uncomfortable process in order to discourage you from having an abortion.
Yes.
Like it's just like when redlining happened, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the and people that were in the quote unquote red lines, which is usually black people and poor people and people of color, you know, they didn't have access to loans. It's like they weren't straight up told that no, but they put so many obstacles. Like you have to have assets, you have to have this, you have to have that. And it's like, wait a minute, but in order for me to get those things, I need the loan.
Yep.
And you're saying I can't get the loan unless I have those things.
It's the I'm not touching you version of oppression, right? Yeah. Like they're not doing anything, but they're like annoyed, like they're making it so much so that you don't want to be here anymore, right? Like now
I'm putting the finger right to your face and saying I'm not touching you.
I'm not touching you. Like I'm not touching you. Like I didn't ban it, right? And you're like, but basically, you told me my insurance won't pay for it. You told me I can't use this. You told me I can't go here. I can't do this. The FDA approved this a long time ago. Y'all won't approve it for this reason. I have to go get my pills here. Like it's so many obstacles that it becomes like almost impossible. Mm-hmm. And so because of that case that allowed states to do all these crazy things, then we got to the Dobbs decision back in June, and Dobbs basically said, yeah, the precedent has been set from all those cases then that we can let it leave it up to the states. And so we had 11 or 13 that had trigger laws. When it falls, we fall. Then you had some states like California that said we'll be sanctuary states. Right. Anybody can come here and get an abortion. We boop, 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 locked and loaded, ready to go. Right. Abortions for all, right?
Right.
And you had some states that we didn't know how they were going to fall, right? So we thought,
it was kind of like an election all over again.
Right. It was, they'll probably limit it. So we won't be able to do it for as long as we've been able to do it, right? They might try to institute a 6-week ban, a 16-week ban. They might try to say yes, but only under these conditions. And yes, but over here in this caveat, right? And so after everything kind of fell, we end up having about half of the country that had either no abortion access or some form of barrier to abortion access.
Right.
And so what that means is we're overtaxing the other half of the country. And it's not like onesie twosies, like this state and the state beside it is good. It's like the entirety of the South, no man's land. So it's not just traveling one state over. It's right. Like I have to go to an entire different region.
You're talking right, like a week of driving if you're only driving.
Yes. Yeah. And so for those like who don't realize America is big, it's a continent basically. It's like, yes, I know there are other countries here, but like we're massive. This is a massive area. Yes. And so going from Georgia to South Carolina, if we were in Europe, would be going to a different country, right? Like, and so that's the kind of travel we're asking people to do. So now you have to get childcare. Now you have to get transportation. Now you have to
pay for gas. Have to think about
people who are undocumented, right? Mm-hmm. Like you have checkpoints. That's another added barrier to traveling out to get care, right? Like you have finances, you have food, lodging, you've got insurance concerns, work. Are you getting PTO? Then we had a bunch of companies that were like, we would let all of our employees off to go get an abortion if they needed one. We're not gonna charge them leave. You're like, cool. But also I'm capable of seeing your financial records. And you gave $2.2 million to the guy who did this. So, like, I'm not really sure.
Whoa.
What you want me to do about, like, this is all for show. Wow. It's like, look, you guys, I'm on your team. Secretly, here you go.
We're not on their team, really. We're not on their team, really. Here's the money. Please just. Oh, Lord. My goodness. That's a lot. That's a lot. That's a lot. And we haven't even gotten to the impact on your practice. But we're at that time where we got to take another quick break, pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked, ladies and gentlemen. We are talking to Tia Savon, who is a sex educator, a black sex educator, and does reproductive justice activism work. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
What's in a man's mind? And if he's from Harlem, there's no use of even trying. Just like the tide, his mind comes and goes. Like much weather when he'll change
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My guest this evening is Tia Savon, a Black sex educator and reproductive justice activist, content creator behind the multimedia digital platform Slippery When Wet. Her work is rooted in the intersections of the Black lived experience and human sexuality. Her motto is centering Black faces in sexual spaces. We have travel the gamut. We have really had an amazing discussion. We spoke about Roe v. Wade, about how you came to Black sex education, discovering your sexual identity as a young child, not even realizing what it was. I wanted to ask you, so you spoke to us about and clarified some things for me personally, and I hope for some of our listeners, about what really happened with Roe v. Wade, because it seemed like a bomb just went off, mm-hmm. and that abortion was like illegal everywhere, which mm-hmm. is not entirely accurate.
Yes.
Basically, my understanding of it is each state is allowed to do whatever they want in terms mm-hmm. in terms of abortion. But I'm curious about what the impact is, or how you kind of had to adjust your frame for your work, because you work as a sex educator, but you also mm-hmm. work as a reproductive justice activist.
Yes.
So how does that frame, how do you change the focus on your lens for that, since that happened?
Roe falling was something anyone who worked in the space or had been paying attention knew was gonna happen.
Right.
We knew it, right? But there are some people who are like, no, it would never happen. But that was more their own personal delusions than like actually paying attention. Roe was falling. Like, there's just so many attacks that were being successful. Mm-hmm. Baby girl was coming down at any moment, mm-hmm. right? The issue is, the aftermath of Roe falling was, we did not set up, and this is on us, like, as yeah. reproductive justice organizations at large, not obviously everyone, but just at large.
Yeah.
We did not set up the infrastructure for the fall of Rome. We thought we could fight the good fight forever, right? Like, and we would just be keeping it at bay. And
so there was no contingency plan for, okay, we see this happening, let's make a plan for it, for the, in the eventuality, you're 99.99% chance.
Yes.
Let's make a plan for that. Mm-hmm. There was no plan made. Okay.
And obviously I can't speak to every organization everywhere, right? Some people probably had perfect infrastructure, but as a whole, mm-hmm. people were scrambling. Like, the document got leaked about a month early.
Right.
And so they were like, hey, Roe failed, or it's going to fall. Right. Right. And so I remember waking up, I have a son, and my grandmother were going back to South Carolina. Mm-hmm. And I had taken a nap. I woke up, I walked them out of the door to like hit the road. I get on my phone, and I mean, it had like blown up. I had no clue. I didn't look at the news since I had come home from work. Mm-hmm. I see that the draft got leaked, and we're scrambling. Like, everybody's like, we got to get on the call. Like, we're trying to put out press releases on all our social media. We're trying to get all the things together, right? And to me, what was so upsetting was all our strategies up until that point had been countering the opposition, right? Like, and not focused on direct action and community work. And so I thought, personally, that was the most important aspect, because again, as a Black woman in the South, mm-hmm. I know if one thing is true, is that my government ain't got me.
Right.
Right. Like, I know that historically speaking, if I want people to ride for me and have my back, that's going to come from my community. Right. When you look at like the Black Panthers creating breakfast, free breakfast programs, right, or other orgs, their existence was created to bridge the gap between literacy rates between Black youths, right, and their white counterparts.
Yeah.
You're talking about reproductive orgs that were literally in existence because the government wasn't doing what it was or what we felt like they should have been doing.
Yeah.
So why then did we put so much of an emphasis on the government not letting us down? Right? Like, when we're looking at all the signs saying that they work. So personal opinion, I thought we should have done that better.
Yeah.
The problem is we didn't. And so now what we were left with is that we didn't have the support for people who needed it.
Yeah.
So when people didn't know where they stand, they didn't know what was going to happen, right? So even when the draft came out, mm-hmm. we knew we'd have 30 days out, August the 25th, I think it was, in Tennessee, there would no longer be abortions accessible here.
Right.
So what does that mean if I have my appointment, right? Like, what does that mean if I need one now, but I haven't scheduled an appointment? Can I still go before then? Can I not? Like, we didn't have those questions readily available for what it meant for people right now.
Yeah, the right? answers we were, to those questions, yeah.
We were scrambling to figure that out, to mm-hmm. get that information out, right? And then what does that look like after the fact? How do have we just do our abortion funds, which are just like scholarships for getting abortions, right? Like, do that's what I'm gonna call it. But basically it's just like a fund. Basically it's just like a fund that says, hey, I need an abortion, I can't pay, and someone pays it for you, right? Like this nonprofit.
Benevolent. So, yeah.
Yes. And so do they start to pay for transportation? Or do they still only cover the service, right? Like, and those are things that a lot of funds, to their benefit, did start to think about, right? Mm-hmm. But not all of them, right? And also, the sad thing about reproductive organizations is we didn't always do a great job of getting out into the public in the first place. So mm-hmm. while a lot of people might know the name Planned Parenthood, they might not know the name Yellowhammer Fund, right? Like, and know right. that abortion funds exist, right? That mm-hmm. you can, if you are in financial need, there are funds created all over the country to pay for people's services. Most people don't know that. Mm-hmm. And even if they do know that, they don't know their names, right? Like, and so even though we're not gatekeeping, we're gatekeeping because we haven't done our due diligence to make sure this information was readily accessible. And right. so now what we're dealing with is, I mean, we have people who still reach out to me. They know I do this work and they're like, I need an abortion. How do I do it? What can I do? Where can I go? Like, yeah. I don't even know what states are doing because it's a state by state basis, right?
Yeah.
And the state today, I could, by the time this airs, right? Like, right. and someone, or even after it aired, but someone reads it 2 weeks from after it aired, or yeah. listen, this another state could change. I'm like, yeah, go to Indiana. And then tomorrow Indiana's like, just kidding, we just dropped the new law. You know what I'm saying?
Like, right.
It's just that, it's that up in the air right now. And so a lot of people are left without the care that they need, right? Yes. And we didn't build out not only what that looks like for abortion, but what does that look like for parents who have children that aren't wanted? Mm. Did we create support systems for families?
Yeah.
Are we shifting our directives from, yes, we need to have funds just for abortion, but also we need to have funds for new parents? Are we fighting for parental bills that are getting us leave and getting us, you know, WIC and welfare benefits and all kind of other things? Like, how are we doing that? Are we pushing for sex ed even harder now?
Yeah.
Are we making sure we get out kits like condoms, emergency contraceptives to more people, right? Mm-hmm. Because abortion just became that much more expensive because now we got to ship you somewhere else, right? Like, and so instead of trying to figure out how we're going to pay for these costs, we also want to figure out, hey, how can we mitigate the need, right? Like, if I can get people to start using condoms more and I can get emergency contraceptive to everyone who needs it, then I might not have to fund the entirety of this like huge financial plate that is abortion now.
Right.
And so Black women in this country are 4 times more likely to have an abortion than their white counterparts.
Right.
We have abortion more than anybody else, right?
Okay.
And that's for a number of systemic issues, right? Yes, some people don't want to be parents, but some people also understand and have to address poverty, right? Like, they aren't in a position to financially care for kids, right? They don't have safe housing. They don't have stable partnerships. Maybe they're victims of abuse. Maybe they're homeless. Maybe they are any number of things, drug users. And then we have the criminalization of pregnancy, right? So, like, you're forcing people to have kids, and then you're also, if they're drug users, going to send them to prison. Okay, well, they have to. And if they don't go to their mandated, like, appointments, their pre, like, they're during their pregnancy appointments, then they're also in trouble because they're not taking care of their kid, right? Like, we're criminalizing people for the state of parenthood that we put them in.
Yeah.
You know? And then we also criminalize miscarriages with abortions, right? So, like, some people, abortion and miscarriages look the same.
Right.
So, if you come in and you had a miscarriage, someone could accuse you of having had an abortion.
Right.
If you're in a state like my state, that's a no-no. Right. And so if they can prove that this was intentional, you threw yourself down the stairs, right? Or maybe you looked up the mifepristone, like miso and mifi, which are the medication abortion pills. Maybe you looked it up but changed your mind. You didn't want to go to another state and have an abortion, but you looked it up. And the government looks up your, they see your search history. They're like, got him. Right?
Like,
we got her, boys. We got her. And you can now be incarcerated for that. We had an issue where Meta, the company that owns Facebook and Instagram, released private messages between a mother and a daughter. Can't remember the state, but it was somewhere up north that has no abortion access.
Right.
And when they released it to the police, they charged the mother and a daughter with having an abortion. And so now we're looking at, okay, well, what apps, what social media apps are safe to use? How do we get those, how do we get that information out to people, right? Like, there are so many things that we weren't prepared for. We weren't prepared for the criminalization access. We weren't prepared for supporting families for unwanted children. We weren't prepared for our already over taxed orphanages and adoption systems. We weren't prepared for what that meant for the economy, right? Like, people are talking about how the cost of living is expensive, gas is high, this is high, this is high, this is high, I'm not making any money. What do you think a baby does to that? Like, we just went through a pandemic, and they were saying that the rates of domestic abuse and intimate partner violence increased. How do you think adding a child to that mix works, right? Like, we are not pushing sex ed everywhere. We're not, we just weren't doing enough. And so what that means is, unfortunately, in the South, there are a lot of people who are in really bad situations, right? And so, but we have been doing things. Like, I'm in a group and we host self-managed abortion trainings, which are not illegal yet.
I love that. Yet.
But basically what it is the WHO, the World Health Organization, has guidelines, and it says that self-managed abortion is perfectly safe. Okay. It is good for this long. And that's what a medication abortion is, right?
Right.
And the states, you have to be in the presence of a doctor when you take the pill. You don't got to stay with the doctor. They just have to see you put it in your mouth. It's just another one of those weird obstacles to, like,
and they'll probably charge you another $5,000 just to do that. Or another,
you know, like, big pharma.
Yeah.
Right? Like, and so, but you cannot get, you can't have an abortion in the state of Tennessee.
Right.
However, the FDA just approved a lot of pharmacies to hold, like, to sell the pill. The Attorney General for the United States said no state can tell us they can't have the pill or mail it.
Right.
But the act of taking it is still illegal. So I can get it, but, like, if I take it in the state, it's still illegal. What you want me to do? Go stand over state lines and then bring my ass back? Like, what do you want me to do?
I have a question for you. Because as we're talking, it seems like a lot of the responsibility of reproduction falls on women and falls on people who have wombs. What about the people who carry the sperm, because it seems to me there's a little bit of an imbalance. I feel like you know, maybe we should also be incorporating, how about we get vasectomies?
So here's the thing. One, by nature of the fact that only certain bodies can have babies, right? That does put the burden on one side more than the other, right? And not even all women can have children, right? Like, that is not exclusive. There are men who can have children. Like, we're talking about gender expansive people.
Right.
However, those assigned female at birth, right? And those who are capable, regardless of genetic predisposition, right, to have children, do bear the brunt, like the brunt of this.
Right.
However, everyone is either directly or indirectly impacted by abortion, right? Like I said, I've had an abortion. That directly impacts the potential baby daddy, right? Yeah. Like, I just saved you coins. You're welcome. I expect a Mother's Day gift. Like, you're welcome. And so that impacts my family. After I had my son, I moved my grandmother in with me because I don't know nothing about raising no babies. Like, I don't know nothing about that. And so she's here to help me.
Right.
But that also means she takes on some of the caregiver roles, right? And so what does that look like? One child versus two children versus three children versus four children. You know what I'm saying? Like, that impacts her. My ability to have an abortion impacts her. My ability to have an abortion impacts my employer, okay? Because you down me because I get maternity leave. Right. Like, so what does that look like for them? So I think we also did a disservice in the repro orgs by not including everyone, by making gay men feel like this is not their fight, by making cis hetero men feel like this is not their fight. And on the topic of vasectomies, I'm hesitant to say that because I think everyone deserves bodily autonomy.
Right.
I think everyone deserves the right to choose when they have kids, what kind of control and family planning tools they use for having children, having kids, not having kids, like all of that.
Yeah.
And so I do think it's a bit reactive to say, like, men are the reason that we have these laws, so men should be the
pushers, well, right? I was more asking that question as providing it as an option because it's not something that's, like, recently I've been noticing. I'm in men's groups and we are starting to talk about vasectomies. Like, I'm in a particular black men's group and a lot of them are like, yo, finally got the snip, you know? Yeah. And I'm just like, okay, all right. Yeah. I feel good hearing about that because at least there are men who are like, you know what? I've had X amount of children. I'm done. I'm not trying to create the 12 tribes of Israel here. I have my 2, 3, 4 kids and that's it. And, but I find that that's not a part of the conversation or even a part of one of the options in terms of like, you can do this, not to like dictate and say men have to get vasectomies, but like, maybe men would think of be like thinking about that as well.
We're not
talking about it. Yeah, at least having the conversation.
Yeah.
Come like,
no, I 100% agree with you and from that viewpoint because, and that's an educational piece, right?
Right.
Like, one of the things that I found really big after the fall of Roe was the education. Like, I need y'all to know what birth controls are out there and how they affect you. I need you to be using condoms. I need you, because like, I cannot support you in the same way I did before.
Yeah.
You cannot support yourself in the same way we did before. And so if you do not want children, like, not if you do want them and you're just like either planned or when it happens, cool. Go about your business. You like it. I love it. Yeah. Right. But if you don't and you're adamant about that, then like we have to get real about what that means. Right.
And your practices as well.
But we also have to get real about what these procedures are. Like, I just recently, this week, had my tubes tied.
Right.
And in one of the comments, someone said, like, is this reversible? And a lot of people think, yeah, tubes tied is reversible. It's not that reversible. Like, most procedures now, and medicine's different, you have to think. Yeah. Like, maybe back in the day, it was more reversible than now. But most procedures in today's age are permanent. And so if you're thinking like, oh, I'm going to get my tubes tied so I'm ready to have kids, that might not actually be a good idea, because you might have just prevented yourself from ever being a parent, right? In that regard. And same with vasectomies, right? And the longer you have the vasectomy, the smaller your chances are of being able to become a parent in that way, right? And so if you're like, oh, I just want to hold off for 5 years, talk to your doctor. Maybe 5 years, you still got good odds. 15, the odds might not be so great, right? Like, if I was a betting man, I wouldn't bet on that, you know? And so, but there are different procedures for each. Like, tubal ligation is not just, like, one way. You can get them snipped, you can get them burned, you can get them tied, tucked, removed, right? And so, however you wanted to do that determines on if that is reversible, and determines how is that reversible, and what the likelihood of you being able to have a child later on, right? And so then you're also having problems with, like, age. If you were assigned female at birth and you got ovaries, baby, them eggs do not be egging the way they were when you was 19. They not giving what they supposed to give at 33.
Not the same verve and enthusiasm. Like, it's, you know, it's a downward slope and it ain't stopping.
They knees bad. They not doing that no more.
The knees are cracking. Ladies and gentlemen, if you are joining us for the first time this evening, I am speaking with Tia Savon, who is a sex educator and a reproductive justice advocate. Activist. We do have to take a quick break and pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Love it when you whisper in my ears. Love it when you're breathing on my face. Love it when you rub down my spine.
Ooh, baby.
Love it when we drink white wine.
Ooh, baby. Sex and noises.
Talk to me.
Really turn me on.
Tell it to me, baby. Tell it to me, baby.
Sex and noises.
Talk to me.
Really do turn me on.
Tell it to me, baby. Tell it to me, baby.
Sex and noises.
Talk to me.
Really turn me on.
Tell it to me, baby. Tell it to me, baby.
Sex and noises.
Talk to me.
Really do turn me on.
Tell it to me, baby.
Now tell me, baby, how many hits must I make before you get the picture that I like it when you talk to me? You say it loud, what you say, don't shy away, say it to my face, talk sweet to me. Go up and down and go round and do all that.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and my guest this evening is Tia Savon, a Black sex educator and reproductive justice advocate, activist, whose motto is Centering Black Faces in Sexual Spaces. Tia, thank you so much. This has been an amazing conversation. We're almost at the end of the show, but I really, really want to ask you about your motto. What is the importance for you of centering Black faces in sexual spaces? Why is this something that's important?
So, like, I can't remember what award show it was, but someone asked Issa Rae, like, who are you rooting for tonight? And she was like, I'm rooting for everybody Black.
Issa Rae.
Yeah, I'm rooting for everybody Black. I grew up, like I said, in the South, with, like, my whole family's from here. Like, I have personally experienced racism. My family has, like, we the shared stories down the line. And like I said, when I first started this work, I didn't see people who looked like me. Mm-hmm. Like, we weren't having conversations that felt relevant to me and my culture. Things were being left out. People were being talked over. People were being forgotten. And so when I say centering Black faces in sexual spaces, basically what I'm saying is, we are here, we have value, we have something to say, and we are entitled to be a part of these conversations, mm-hmm. right? And so what that looks like is addressing anti-Blackness in the kink and BDSM spaces, right? Like, talking about practices that maybe I don't want to engage in with my Black behind history, right? Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. It's all good if you want to use that terminology, but maybe I don't because it has historical or cultural significance to me, right? Yeah. Like, or maybe things just hit deeper for me because of these things, right? Mm-hmm. And what does that look like? Like I said, I have a son, he's 4, mm-hmm. right? And what kind of world do I want him to grow up in? And am I making those spaces safe, not just for him or for people to be open sexually and open and happy and healthy and whole, but are we doing that in a way that still adds value to his Blackness, right? That doesn't diminish from that. Right. Yeah, you can be queer as long as you're not too Black, right? Like, mm-hmm. yeah, you can be a part of the scene as long as this is not too Black. Mm. Right, like, and I just don't want that. I don't want to feel like you can be in these spaces but only one kind of Black person, right? Like, mm-hmm. and I want Black people to be able to have these conversations because, I mean, every community does harm,
yep.
right? And a lot of communities do the same kind of harm, just in different ways.
Yep.
And so I want us to be able to address that harm so we can be better together, right? Like, yes, the patriarchy exists and is real. And yes, there are Black men and others, even, you know, gender expansive people, Black women, who also buy into the patriarchy,
of course.
Right? Like, of course. And so while that's true, that doesn't necessarily mean that we need to have a gender war, right? Like, that doesn't mean that I believe in divesting, you know, from Black men or Black people who have bought into the patriarchy and misogyny. I do think that there are ways to rehabilitate, right, to have transformative justice. And there's some people that don't want to get in, right? Like,
I don't
have that type of time for people who don't want to be the change, right? Like, the people who don't want to advocate on behalf. They don't want to really knock down exploitative systems. They just want to change their ranking in it, right? Yeah. They just hate they at the bottom. Right?
Yeah.
You don't want to get rid of the pyramid. You just want to be at the top.
Yeah.
And so I'm talking about holding space for people who are doing the work, people who want to enjoy and play and engage in things, right? Like, when we're talking about kinks, I know a lot of Black people are like, oh, there's white people, bleep.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And so, but it's not. There are a lot of Black people who engage in that. And I don't want us to have and hold space for shame and stigma because we feel like this is not something of our people. Right? Yeah. Like,
I mean, there's a whole book that a friend of mine gifted me for my birthday by Ariane Cruz called The Color of Kink.
The Color of Kink, yeah.
So there's a whole book on it so people can go and read about it and understand it more. I find that information and education is so important, not just on an academic level, but on a societal level, because I feel personally that the majority of your education comes from the people that you interact with, whether it's in an academic environment or it's on the street or it's at work or it's at home or it's your neighbors. You know, you go into the corner store and the people that you see regularly, whatever the case may be, your education, you're constantly being educated by by your surroundings. But you also have to prioritize what you're consuming. You have to figure out, okay, if I love talking about sex, then I need to educate myself about that. Or if I want to have sex, I need to educate myself about that. And it's also a very personal thing. So you gotta take the priority. And it's like, I'm always of the opinion that I need to understand things. Like, if I like a certain thing, then I think I need to understand why I like it.
Yeah. You know,
like, I had to do some introspection in my life because at one point I was dating a lot of single mothers. And I was like, why am I doing this? Like,
oh, you love us for real.
I'm like, what's going
real
on?
Real bad.
Like, you know, every time I turn around, and it's not like, oh, I'm a single mom and then I like the person. It's like, I meet the person, like the person, they're a single mom. I'm like, oh, damn, okay. Do I want to step away? I'm like, eh, whatever. And then I was like, oh, there's a part of me that's ready to become a father.
Like, yeah.
That was a part of my thinking process.
Yeah.
You know, and then there's also kink surrounding having relations with moms, and you know, it's like it's so layered. And if you don't take the time to educate yourself and to understand where it's coming from, it can go left really fast.
Yeah. Also, like, a lot of times we go through life doing things that we think we should, or doing things because that knowledge or information was given to us, mm-hmm. but it doesn't necessarily make us feel whole. It doesn't make us feel happy. It doesn't make us feel accepted or liberated or free, right? Like, and so what we end up finding is people are having a difficult time connecting with certain things they want to do because of the things that they've learned, those harmful attitudes and images, right? And so what does that mean for us as Black people, mm-hmm. right? Like, because a lot of Black people have this internal dialogue that always tells us we are the representative of our race, right? Like, I don't want to be too loud because then I'm going to be the loud Black girl. Listen. Like, I want to say something because they kind of piss me off, but I don't want to come off as an angry Black woman.
Have you ever had, like, a situation where someone, usually a white person, says, oh yeah, Tia, you know, you should know this, and you don't have the information, you get upset about it, but then you're like, damn, maybe I should have had that information.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
Because I've had that.
Like, guessing.
Like, I used to hang with the Hellenic Association, which is the Greek organization at when I say Greek organization, not like a fraternity, but a club, mm-hmm. and used to be in the same room as the African Caribbean Association. And I remember distinctly this one guy. He was always just getting people upset. He's that white guy that you just want to wring his neck, but
devil's advocate.
Yeah. And he's talking about the United Nations. This was in the early 2000s. And he's like, what's the name of the secretary? And that was, it was a group of us, all of the Greeks, and me, the only Black guy. And he's like, Kim, you know who he is. And
he was black,
because I'm black? And I got mad. And then afterwards, I was like, damn, maybe I should have known it was Kofi Annan.
But like, oh, my ancestors and them, I probably should know Kofi Annan today.
Right.
But I think, like, we struggle with that, right? Mm-hmm. It's feeling like a failure for not knowing things like about Black history, because then you're like, dang, my people fought. We did all of these things for this, right? And now I'm letting them down because I don't even have the decency to remember his name, right? Yeah. Like, baby, it's not that serious. Like, you will be okay. And they are not rolling in their graves. And if they are, they need to get over themselves, right? Like, and so I think that, like, we're suffering from all of this, but a lot of times we don't take the time to figure out where the root of that comes from and unlearn it. Mm. And so let's say you're not even like trying to do anything on the extremes that are what people would consider extremes out of sex, right? But maybe you're not just virgin until married, get married, stay married, no divorce, have one husband, one wife, have kids, picket fence, dog, Maximilian, whatever, right? Like,
yeah.
But you date around, right? Like, who knows how many people you've actually had sex with, but you have a boyfriend here and a boyfriend there, and like, you got people, your old Black family members calling you fast or saying like anything negative or in regards to your sexuality, basically implying that you're loose or a harlot, a Jezebel, you know? And so how does that feel to you, right, mm-hmm. as a Black person? And how does it feel to you to not want to be, or maybe you're not living your life wholly because you don't want to be labeled as these things? Yeah. Because let's be real, when the Europeans got to Africa and they saw like scantily clad African women, they were like, these whores, right? Like, and everything,
but
they
with
do,
a big old erection jumping up, they're like, my God,
okay, like, don't hate me because you ain't me, baby. Then I can't do nothing for you. And so everything, all the policies after that stem from the white fear of Black sexuality, yes. Right? Like, even talking about like marijuana and the legislation, they were like, oh, it'll make white women attracted to Black men, or Black men take advantage of white women, right? Like, we're talking about, a lot of the stereotypes that we as Black people have are sexual, like, in nature, right? And so
the most prominent ones, especially.
Right? And so if you're afraid to be your full sexual self because you don't want to be just another stereotypical, can't control their body, lusty Black person, right? Like, who's destined to be a statistic, a single mom, or someone who has 2, 3, 4 baby daddies, right? Like, or someone like any of the things, then you're limiting yourself and your expression, right? And if we don't have safe spaces for Black people, created by Black people, right, where you're not trying to shelter what you feel like you have to say, or you're not trying to cater to someone else's emotions to not make them feel guilty about things, and you're able to like really work through some of the both harmful and positive things that we do as a society to get to a better space for you, right, then we are doomed to recreate some of these harmful narratives, right? Like, yeah. Audre Lorde has a body of work that's called The Uses of Erotic Power.
Okay.
Yeah, something like that. Oh, God. Now I feel like I just messed up. Now I'm having that moment.
Now you're having that guilt moment of like, oh, my God.
I just read this.
Right.
But basically, she talks about how erotic and eroticism is powerful. Like, there's power in the erotic.
Yeah.
And we shouldn't shun away from that because, one, sexuality is a part of the human experience. Mm-hmm. And we try to dampen, okay, like, happiness is good, anger is bad, right? Like, faith is good, sex is bad, right? Like, we keep trying to limit what parts of a human we can be instead of understanding that maybe we can be all the parts, but in different ways. Different situations call us for different things. Yeah. There have been a lot of situations that anger has literally saved my life, right? Or righteously got me something that I was owed, right? Like, I should have been angry in that position, right? Like, that was the right response. Stop telling me not to be angry when you did that, right? Yeah. Or maybe this was a moment where I felt good and I wanted to share that, you know?
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, we are coming to the end of the show. I'm sorry that I have to cut you off. We're going to have to bring you back and do a part two because we don't have enough time in an hour and a half to get through everything. Please let people know where they can get at you, how they can find you, follow you on social media.
Yes, so I run the account Slippery and Wet, and the three and slippery, or the E in slippery is a three. You can find me on Instagram at Slippery When Wet, on Twitter at Slippery When. I'm on Pinterest, Slippery When Wet. You can get my website. Just holla at your girl, right? This year, I'm going to be rolling out a lot of different projects where I host workshops and stuff virtually, just so I can reach out to different people and in person. So if you see me, say hi. I'm pretty chill. But yeah, that's where you can find me, Slippery When Wet, on basically any and everything.
Thank you so much, Tia Savan, for being here this evening, for sharing your knowledge, for sharing information and educating me personally, and hopefully someone who's listening. Ladies and gentlemen, that brings us to the end of the show this week. If you just tuned in just now, at 8:31, you can listen to the archives on CKUT.ca. Just go into Programming and Archives and you find Soul Perspectives. But if not, tune back in next week, Tuesday, and every Tuesday evening after that from 7 to 8:30 p.m. You've been listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Everything I touch will turn to gold. 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 And it's okay, say what you gotta say, 'cause you don't know, yeah, you don't know it. But everything I touch will turn to gold. And it's okay,
say what you... Always see you around my way, you're always so close. Look me dead in my soul, and you want me to stay. That's when I know that I could go there with you. and I remember why I'm still loving you. So many people always there, and they're looking our way.
What's the matter? Is everything all right? That's okay. I've got just the right thing for you. Take KUT.
90.3 FM. CKUT is looking for a full-time sales and administrative coordinator. The sales and administrative coordinator is responsible for the sale of on-air advertisements and co-presentation partnerships, as well as the negotiating of the radio station's administrative contractual agreements. The ideal candidate will have a passion for community radio, the ability to work with volunteers, clients, and community members, is well-organized, and has strong negotiating skills. We are looking for someone with knowledge of Montreal's arts, culture, and activity scenes who sees media as a tool for building community and can work in a non-hierarchical organization. Financial literacy, bilingualism, and experience with Google Suite products are also a requirement. For full details about the position, wage, and benefits, please visit ckut.ca. The cutoff for applications is Monday, February 6th at 5 p.m. CKUT strives to be a progressive working environment and recognizes experience outside of the formal workplace as important qualifications. We value the unique contributions that individuals from traditionally underrepresented and oppressed communities bring to our organization and encourage these individuals to apply.
Ascultați emisiunea de radio Marcaro pe 90.3 FM CKUT.
Și din nou mergem prin cluburi, aceleași mese, aceleași fete, aceleași locuri. Și din atâția oameni te-am văzut pe tine.